and welcome to episode 8 of What We've Watched. My name is Chris.
This is Emmett.
And this week we are going to talk about Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah. Before we get into our main event here, last week you kind of inspired me a little, you know, talking about the how you'd had like a big movie watching week and whatnot.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I've been really bad with sort of keeping up on movie watching in the last, you know, number of years, and I mean I still watch movies obviously, but not the same way I used to, and it's like I procrastinate a lot and just miss a lot of things, and you know, usually takes a while to sort of catch up on some of the things I didn't watch. My tendency, you know, lately is just sort of throw on some, like, old favorite, you know, yeah, and just kind of have it on. And just, you just, because you know, like, how you're going to feel, you know.
You don't have to pay 100% attention.
Yeah.
You can do it while you're doing something else.
Because, yeah, yeah.
Like, I know how this goes.
Yeah, and I get, you know, I get distracted easily and whatnot. I was sort of inspired by, you know, you talking about that last week. I watched... You know, I made a real concentrated effort to try to, like, catch up on some of the things from the last couple of years
mm-hmm.
that I hadn't gotten to. I watched a bunch of movies.
Wow.
So, I was just going to quickly, you know, since you talked...
That's good. I watched nothing but this movie.
Well, that's perfect, because last week...
You'd been
talking about how you had a big movie week.
Yeah, I watched a lot of TV, but no movie, other movies this week.
Yeah, fair enough. I watched the... I know we briefly talked about this already, but I watched the Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh, yes!
Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the 93, like, Kenneth Branagh one, so I know the story and everything really well. It was kind of interesting on that note to sort of see a different take on it with, you know, the exact same text. So, that's all right. I watched Adventure in Space and Time, which was from the, it's part of the, like, Doctor Who 50th anniversary stuff. It's like a TV movie, but it's, I guess what they call, like, a docudrama, and it's about sort of how Doctor Who was created, like, originally.
Oh,
like,
that's cool.
Sort of the beginnings of it, and sort of the first few years with the original, the first Doctor, William Hartnell. And, but it's a movie, like, it's all actors playing the people and stuff. And
it's like a reenacted documentary, kind of.
It's not a documentary at all, though. Like, it's a movie. It's like a biopic, kind of. But
that's what I meant, yeah.
It's, but it... I really liked it, actually. It was way better than I was expecting it to be.
When's it from?
Well, it's like 2013, I guess.
It's
part of the 50th anniversary.
So. Oh, right, of course.
So
okay,
they did a whole bunch of different things that year, and I didn't actually watch all of it at the time, other than the actual, like... special, you know, the episode, the 50th anniversary
episode.
But this was something that was done as part of that, and it's really good. The acting's really good. David Bradley plays William Hartnell, the first Doctor, and you know him, like, from like, we've seen him in a lot of stuff recently. Like, he's the what's that new vampire show, The Strain or whatever? He's like the old Vampire Hunter guy.
Oh, yes.
And he was in the Harry Potter movies. He was like Fitch.
Fitch in the Harry Potter movies.
Filch or whatever.
Filch. Is what it is, yes.
The like caretaker of the Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And Walder Frey in Game of Thrones.
Oh, yes.
Red Wedding, right?
That's
the old
right.
dude there. So, like,
oh,
he's been,
does he have his facial hair there?
So he's been doing
a totally
lot.
I totally didn't recognize him.
So he's been doing
he
a lot of stuff lately.
Walder
so he plays Frey. He plays William Hartnell, the first Doctor, in this movie. And he does a really great job. Just, like, the depth that he brings to, like,
that, like, he should just actually play the Doctor.
The complexity
the
of,
doctor.
Yeah, just the complexity of the character, you know, because... He could be sort of grumpy, like the first Doctor was, but he just had this great, like, heart to him, you know? Like, he just loved doing it, and it was just devastating for him when they, like, basically replaced him forcibly because he just couldn't do anymore because of his, like, poor health and stuff. Like, he couldn't remember lines, and he was just having so much struggle, right? But he was just, he was so just devastated by it, right? And
loved
just,
doing it so much.
Well, he loved doing it, and also just because it was always, he was always working with these young people, right? Like, the people who would play the companion characters and stuff on the show. Mm. And so they would always do, because they had such a punishing schedule in those days, right? It was like 40 episodes per season, and there would be like almost no break between seasons even. So they made so many episodes.
You'd basically do an episode a week.
They worked
nonstop.
They worked so hard, yeah. You know, and the episodes were almost done like sort of plays almost. Like they were only allowed like four edits per show or something, you know, or some ridiculous thing like that. And so it was just such a huge workload. And so these young people would come on and play like the companion characters, and they would be there for like maybe a season, maybe, you know, a season and a half, two seasons maybe, right? And they would move on to other things in their life because it would kind of give them a springboard in their career, and then they would move on. And it just was like so hard for him every time, you know, because they were just these young people just getting started. So it was understandable, but he would get so attached to them, and then they would move on, and it was really hard for him. So very fascinating, great,
mm-hmm.
really, really well done. I really recommend it for anybody who's even the slightest bit interested in Doctor Who and how it got started. And then I watched Lords of Salem, the newest Rob Zombie
movie. Yeah,
That was not too good.
No.
It has some good like imagery, like it's sort of well crafted imagery, but it's really boring.
Like
nothing happens, and it's just you're just sitting there going like, wow, this is great, this is so exciting, nothing is happening. And I like pretty much, you know, all Rob Zombie's movies to a certain degree. Some of them I really like, so that's why I sort of checked it out. But yeah, this one was kind of disappointing. And I watched finally watched the American Old Boy.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's not really worth it.
Oh really?
I mean,
it just like
if you got some free times. Yeah, basically the problem is I would probably like it a lot more if the original didn't exist.
Yeah.
It really brings nothing to the plate.
Like there was another remake recently that was like almost a shot for shot like.
And the thing is originally the concept, like in the really early stages of development, when you first started hearing that they were going to do like an American version, it was supposed to sort of be like an adaptation of like of the manga. So it was going to be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point along the way, they decided to just remake the Korean film instead.
Weird.
Which I don't know why they did that. So if they had done an adaptation of the Japanese manga that it was based on originally, which is like very, very different,
wonder why
that would have actually kind of been interesting because it would have been unique.
I wonder if there was maybe like a sort of better, like, let's just play it safe.
Yeah.
Most people haven't seen Old Boy, so it doesn't matter.
But for some reason, they decided to just do a remake of the Korean film, and it's, like, it just brings nothing new to the table. It's just extra, a little extra sort of cruelty and gore. Like, it's really just a little more, it's more unpleasant, really.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, well, great.
Yeah, see, I just recently, like, rewatched
Old Boy. But I will say a couple of things about that very quickly is, I know that the original preferred sort of cut that Spike Lee created was like 140 minutes.
Ooh.
So they cut probably over like well over half an hour.
Wow.
For the final cut. So I feel like, and he was really unhappy with it, and he actually had them list his credit as just like the regular, like a Spike Lee film credit, mm-hmm. rather than the normal Spike Lee joint. Because he just was not happy with the final product. So I feel like, I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Spike Lee fan by any means, but he definitely has talent and skill as a filmmaker. And I feel like maybe in this case he was right, because if that other material was in there, it might have actually made it more interesting.
Yeah,
because
something.
As it is, it's just kind of like a really lame, just straight up copy, basically.
So it's like, if you don't like reading subtitles, you can watch the American version.
And the positive thing that I will say is the actors really give it their all.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin really, really just...
It seemed that way in the
he
trailer.
He does not hold back. Like, he gives it his all as an actor. Elizabeth Olsen is great. And Charlton Copley is great, of course. I mean,
yeah.
I always like Charlton Copley. He's always reliable. It's a weird part, but, you know...
Yeah, actually, for how he was in that.
It works for him, because he does weird parts well. So that's the positive thing I'll say about it, is it's definitely the actors really give it their all, but unfortunately, but
it's just pointless. Copy and paste.
It's just pointless. It really doesn't need to exist. And then the last thing, other than our sort of feature presentation this week, was I did the Grand Budapest Hotel. The West Anderson.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
It was awesome. I mean, there's nothing really that can be said about that. It was different than I was expecting, though, because like I knew it was like, okay, Wes Anderson is going to be kind of weird and offbeat, but it's like this twisted fairy tale. Like, it's not even remotely even like this, you know, it's a complete, it was not what I expected at all. Because, I mean, first of all, I thought it had something to do with Budapest.
Yeah,
because I just assumed the name of the hotel, which is not an uncommon thing that hotels kind of have the name evoking some other place as like to just kind of get like sound good or have a certain evoke a certain feeling. But yeah, I mean, it has nothing to do with that. It's totally fictional location and very kind of. It reminded me of because last week you were talking about having watched The Princess Bride.
Oh yeah,
and it was like The Princess Bride, but instead of being like in medieval times, in the set mainly in the 30s. You know, but it was like it had that kind of fairy tale quality of where it's like this fictional country and you know, it's kind of just off.
It's
it's
those qualities are very Wes Anderson
sort of
to do sort
historical.
Of.
It's just kind of its own thing.
Yeah,
it's impressive.
And also, it's
like
historical. Sort of like it's a story within a story within a story.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. Actually, I guess that actually jogs my memory. I did actually watch another movie this week. Also, Hotel in the title. Me and Laura watched Best Marigold Hotel.
Yeah. Well, the second one's out now.
We saw a thing about the second one, and we're like, oh, I remember that. We never did watch that first one.
I'll get to those eventually.
Yeah. It's quite good. It's all your favorite old actors in a movie, and it's really quite, you know, as a 37-year-old male, clearly not the target audience.
It's all right.
But, you know what? I like all these actors.
Yeah.
It's a very warm, funny, sometimes sad movie. You know, really funny. Mm-hmm. I forgot. When you said hotel, I was like, wait, I watched a movie with a hotel in it this week.
Yeah.
All right. It was like way early on, so it was like literally the night after we recorded the last cast, so that's why I forgot about it, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All
right. Yeah.
So this week we are talking about Captain Coronas Vampire Hunter, as you said earlier. So this was released in April of 1974. Although apparently it was made in 72.
Yeah, I did some looking into that. Yeah. And
I don't know, I've seen varying things because, like, on IMDb, for example, it lists the filming dates as being in 73. Yeah. But everything else I've seen says it was made in 72. And the copyright is 72.
Yeah.
But it was definitely not released until 74. Mm-hmm. So basically, this was from Hammer Films. Which was famous for like the Dracula and Frankenstein and stuff movies that they made. Brit is a British, like sort of specialty horror studio. So this is where like people like Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, and stuff got famous.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Lee, of course, like was in their Dracula series, and that was like a huge thing. So by this point in the 70s, Hammer was kind of on its decline.
Yeah,
and it was pretty much coming to the end of their big franchises and that. So this movie was sort of an attempt to start a new franchise. It was intended to be a series.
Yeah,
happen. But that didn't happen because basically, like I say, Hammer was kind of already on its way out and it was starting to have like financial problems and stuff.
And well, they declined any like outside funding for this. They were like, we're gonna back it all ourselves, and then
it was released by like Paramount or something.
They had like a release, but like it was produced with all their own money.
Yeah,
and then it
was probably a bad idea.
Terribly in the box office.
Yeah, well, I think that it's Hammer. Just it had a time.
Yeah,
and that time kind of passed. Mm-hmm. But it sort of has become, it's gone on to be sort of like a bit of a cult classic, and it's considered to be like one of the better of the late, sort of late period Hammer
which
films.
Actually kind of surprised me that this is such a cult classic. Like,
well, it's not to say that it was like, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's definitely not as good as the earlier Hammer stuff, but it's sort of quirky.
After seeing it, I was kind of thinking like, what is it that people cling to in this movie
usually a
cult classic has like, there's like a reason people grab to it. And I was like, well, the movie has a lot of different and interesting, like it has interesting stuff in it. It doesn't have what you usually expect to see in a cult classic movie. And I was like, I just found that's really neat that regardless of that, and it's quite well regarded. It has,
It's not like
it was hard to find people saying bad things about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like it's good was the worst thing I could really find about it.
Yeah.
And then that ranged to people like really giving it lots of credit for some of the different things it did.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe that's
I would agree with that.
The cult status comes from.
It's not great overall.
Yeah.
But I think that what distinguished it is that they sort of tried to do some different things, which maybe was what contributed to it being not so successful.
Yeah.
Because often when you do try to do different things, you know, audiences that are used to a certain thing don't always appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
So it was written and directed by Brian Clemens, who's pretty much the only thing that he's really, really well known for. Would be like he was the primary writer of the British TV series The Avengers, so not you know anything to do with Marvel Comics, but you know like with John Steed and Emma Peel and all that, you know, sort of the adventure show.
There was the Avengers movie recently.
In like the 90s, they made a really crappy Hollywood movie.
Was that the 90s? Oh,
yeah, with
it's more recent than the TV show.
So the first thing I have about it...
I got a couple other things.
Well, okay, I should probably explain. So the idea is basically this. It's, you know, the standard sort of Hammer horror kind of period piece sort of... It's kind of not really specific, but I guess it's probably like the 1800s or something.
Looks about that.
They're never really that specific usually. It's just kind of generic sort of gothic...
Pre-guns.
Gothic era.
Pre-guns,
It's true, there is no guns in this, which actually surprised me. I thought there would at least be sort of,
like
you know...
a pistol or...
Yeah, like...
Blunderbuss.
Yeah, or something like that, but they don't actually have guns, so...
It feels like an era where you could have maybe had
it's
those,
very,
but they just...
Yeah, it's very unclear, because it feels... I mean, there are times, there are some characters where you're just like, they're like... They're from the
70s. Yeah,
like they didn't even try.
I feel,
you know,
a lot of the characters.
And other
in this
times,
movie are just from the
and
70s.
Then other times, it's like it seems like sort of 1800s. But then you'd be like, well, it should be a little more advanced. Like you should see guns and things like that. But I mean, I guess it is supposed to be like a remote village, foresty area. But basically, you know, there's these victims turning up that have been super aged, I guess.
So, like, young girls show up.
Yeah, young girls that have been murdered, but they become super aged. And so there's this doctor, village doctor character that calls in. I guess he knew Captain Kronos, and he arrives with his hunchback professor partner.
Yeah.
That was interesting. So I guess that's the basic idea. You know, it turns out that Captain Kronos is a vampire hunter, or that they are vampire hunters. You said you had something to say.
Just a couple of things. If you're interested in watching this movie, if you like what you hear to say about it, or you want to watch it before you listen to the rest of this, the entire movie is up on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
On the Hammer, like the Hammer YouTube channel.
Okay.
You can just watch the movie in its entirety
good.
And in fact, a lot of Hammer movies are up there.
Oh, cool.
And so you can see it there. And also, in 2011, this movie was... adapted into a novel by a British author named Guy Adams. I've read a number of his books.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it was. I guess he saw it, was inspired, and decided to do a novelization of
that's
this
interesting because he probably is able to bring a lot more like depth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's, you know, like in a book, you get character thoughts and stuff like that. So I'm I think I may have seen it at the time and been like, oh, like, that's a kind of a Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter. That's kind of a kitschy name. I wonder what this book is about. Because I didn't know about this movie up until you brought it up a little while ago.
Well, I mean, I found out about it through just, you know, getting interested in the Hammer stuff. And, like, I've got a few of the Draculas, and that's about it. Because they're just a little bit easier to find than most of the other stuff.
I always get Hammer Studios mixed up with the guys who do Toxic Avengers.
Oh, no, that's a totally different
thing. Yeah, yeah. I always think of them as, like, no, these guys are the... These guys are the 70s guys. These guys are...
Hammer was mainly big in, like, the 60s. Their major franchises started in, like, the late 50s. And basically, Hammer... The reason why Hammer was really important is because they were one of the first to sort of... although the movies themselves are, like, period pieces and stuff, they were the first to kind of... really bring horror into the then sort of modern kind of filmmaking, where it was color, it was, you know, there's blood and, you know, lots of cleavage and later actual nudity and things like that, that sort of became what horror was, sort of became the prevailing thing in horror. And they were very
on this, in a way, almost on like the kind of the more up and serious of kind of like a B movie.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Not a B movie, but like, well, not quite a full...
I mean, they're sort of B movies, but they're sort of B movies, but they were modern, you know, a much more modern sort of style of filmmaking.
B movies usually play to being a B movie.
Yeah.
This movie played the... We're a little bit B, but they played the other way.
Yeah.
Where it says, like, also, we're going to have... We're not just going to, like, cater to that. We're not going to...
Okay, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I noticed at the beginning was, is it just me or, like, that first sort of victim that they show?
Yeah.
Did they not just put, like, that ridiculous blonde wig on just, like, an old lady?
Absolutely.
And then that was, like, the post-aged...
All the aged people just had... Because the hair... Because later on there was...
Some of it looked like makeup, but...
Later on there was... wigs galore in this movie.
Oh yeah,
this movie is full of wigs and pantaloons.
Yeah,
pantaloons everywhere. Every man.
But that
pantaloons.
That particularly, I really kind of noticed that, because I was just like, first of all, that blonde wig is ridiculous, and secondly, I'm pretty sure they just found an old lady and stuck that wig on her.
Well, because she's wearing it's before she gets aged.
Yeah.
The actress is wearing the blonde wig.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, and then they just take the wig off her and put it on.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not like they made a wig to copy her hair.
No, no, no.
It was a wig the whole time. But it's like, I don't even think they tried to, like, age up.
Yeah.
You know, I think they just found an old lady and slapped the wig on her, which was hilarious. Because in some of the other stuff, there is some makeup in that.
A lot of POV shots in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is, like, not something
sort of
you
expect from the time,
It's sort of I think maybe you expect it from horror movies, especially
but
maybe
more
at the
later.
Time.
Like,
yeah, later.
Like,
80s,
you know,
style.
Yeah, well, Black Christmas was kind of one of the first to sort of do that.
And so it was interesting, like,
it became a thing.
This starts out, like, you get POV of the vampire slash monster.
Or whatever it is.
So
the heroes... Captain Kronos and the Hunchback Professor. I didn't write down the name.
Starts with a G.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They come in town, or they come towards town. They meet Carla, who's like this girl that's been put in the stocks for dancing on a Sunday. And they free her.
It's so hilariously ridiculous.
Well, but it makes sense, because that's those kind of, like, superstitious, like, you know, remote village kind of things. Like, you kind of... It fits the whole sort of, like, vampire movie thing.
Grossed. Professor Grossed.
Grossed. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. So they meet the Carla, played by Caroline Monroe.
Was she somebody?
Well, sort of. Like, she was known for... Because before this, she did Dracula AD 1972 for Hammer. She had actually been signed... to, like, as, like, a contract player for Hammer because she'd been discovered as she was a model before that, no surprise there, but she did those two movies basically, Dracula 80 1972 and this, and then pretty much, like, every other part that they offered her for Hammer she turned down because they required nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, like, completely against doing nudity. She did do, like, one of the the Sinbad movies in the 70s, the Ray Harryhausen ones.
Harryhausen Sinbad movies, yeah.
She did one of those, and, you know, a lot of TV and things like that. But, yeah, she's kind of, like, she did a lot of sort of, she's sort of, like, a kind of classic British sort of genre queen, you know. Like, she did a lot of, like, sci-fi and horror and stuff like that at various, for various things. But, yeah, so then the sort of next thing that I kind of noticed was they have the second victim is this girl, Isabella, they say. Mm-hmm. And I thought, because at that for that one, like, she sort of goes comes back home and kind of staggers in and falls down. And the first thing they show is they don't show, like, her face or anything.
Yeah.
It's just all kind of in the dark, like silhouetted. And then the first thing they show is, like, they lift up her hand, and it's kind of like this, like, decrepit hand. And I was like, that's what they should have just stayed on. But then they had to show the face. And again, it's just this, it's like really terrible makeup. Yeah, it was this really terrible, like old makeup. And I was like, man, like, if they just showed the hand, like, that would have been enough. We already, you know, they already sort of did the face thing. We get that they're aged up. Showing them holding up the hand would have been enough, I think. I would have preferred that.
Yeah. This movie has a certain look to it, which is very, everything, like, everybody's clothes are clean.
Yeah.
There's an aspect to this movie that feels much more like watching a play than a movie. Like,
yeah.
The sets are all very, very obvious. Oh, yeah.
Everything's
sets.
Just, like, very perfect. And,
yeah, yeah. Like, everybody's like, when clothes they first, is clean.
When they first,
there's no wear and tear on anything.
Yeah, first get Carla out of the stocks, and she's got, like, a little bit of dirt on her face, but you can already see, like, okay, this is, like, you know, a model, basically.
Oh yeah, she's and full then, on, like, massive but then, of makeup
but then,
and eyeshadow.
But then they show, like, after she's wiped it off and everything, and then, like, that's it. Like, yeah. She just looks perfect for the rest of the movie, you know? And you're just like, isn't this, like, this remote, like, weird village in Europe somewhere, you know? And it's just, like, it's hilarious. I mean, it's just part of the style, but as you say, it is a style.
Yeah.
I did really like the sort of next thing was when they discussed the whole, like, vampire thing. And the whole, they discuss about how, you know, instead of them biting the neck and sucking the blood and how this one, you know, drains the youth and the life, you know, out of, and the doctor character is kind of like, oh, well, you know, that can't be, like, everybody knows, like, how vampires mm-hmm. work, you know? And then the Professor Gross has that thing about, like, you know, there are as many species of vampire as there are beasts of prey. And they talk about how, you know, there's all different sort of types of vampires that have different kind of rules or, you know, different things they do and
different ways of killing them.
Different ways of killing them. And they mention, you know,
fire.
Yeah. They mention the stake in the heart and hanging and then, like, different things. And I was like, that's a really interesting idea because usually in any given, like, vampire movie or whatever it is, like, a specific mythology, they have a specific mythology of, like, in our version, this is how they work.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's saying that there's, like, different species as if they're, like, an animal, you know, a different
like,
type
like
of animal.
Kind of like anything goes.
Yeah, and then, know. And that, the different types, and so you don't always know. I mean, when, as a vampire hunter, you have to first investigate and figure out what kind of vampire you're dealing with, what are the rules
part
that
of that
apply.
Was probably because this was supposed to be set up as a series.
Yeah.
This way, like, each movie could have a different kind
but
of
also
vampire,
right off the bat.
You would have to figure that out. Like,
yeah.
Is this the one that's allergic to fire?
Exactly.
Or,
which is what happens, but they, because they're doing it right off the bat, and they're saying, especially coming off of having that, the long run of the Dracula series, which is kind of very traditional, and the fact that they're doing something different right off the bat, it's like they had to basically say right now, this is our explanation of why it's different.
It's,
you know?
It's an interesting bit of exposition that actually, like, fits really well without just being exposition for exposition's sake. Like,
yeah. Well, I like the Professor Gross. Like,
oh,
I think he was
by far the best character.
Yeah, he was actually pretty cool.
Captain Kronos is just a dick.
Well, Captain Kronos,
the
problem with Captain Kronos, I didn't really find him that unlikable. The problem with him is that he's basically, like, superhuman, practically. He's that completely, like, cliched, like,
shows little
cliche,
emotion.
But rarely actually existing.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, the perfect hero. Like, where he's, like, he never does anything wrong. He's good at everything.
Yeah.
He's handsome. He's, you know, suave. And he's just, like, perfect. And you're just like, well, that it's not interesting at all. No. Like, as completely...
Yeah, he has no... There's no character.
It's completely uninteresting because he's just perfect.
Yeah.
You know? And he's, like, so effective and so good at, to be, like, that there's no... Nothing is a challenge for him.
Yeah.
There's no challenge ever
for
him. Like, everything he does is perfect. And it's just kind of like, okay, that's not that interesting. So, but, I mean, having that and then having, like, the professor and other sort of characters and stuff, it actually kind of works because you do get that other side of things. I like the... I don't know if you have anything else to say in this at this point, but... I like the...
His friend actually was a fine character, too.
Like the doctor?
The doctor that calls
yeah,
him.
Dr. Yeah, Dr. Marcus.
Dr. Marcus, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's actually, him and the... there's a good scene between him and the professor where Captain Kronos has to do something. Mm-hmm. And they're standing in a doorway, and he says something along the lines of, you know, on rainy days like today, I like just to, you know, have a drink and play some chess.
Right.
And, oh, you know, just so no, on rainy days, right. I like to have a drink some wine and play some chess. And the professor looks at the sky, and it's clearly not raining. And then he reaches his hand and goes, it's positively pouring. And then, like, arm in arm, shoulder over arm, they, like, prance off to go play some chess and drunk.
Well, because they also, because that's, there's the whole thing, because Kronos goes to sleep with Carla.
Oh, right. That's
right. And they go into the thing, and then the barn or whatever.
That's right,
And then the professor just kind of goes, like, I play chess.
Yeah,
and then
they
go off to play chess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So.
It's just a really good...
So I like the, where they do that, I guess at the church or whatever, there's that shot that's like through the church bell, like the little tower kind of thing. And then it's, but the camera's like going through the space
between under the
bell.
The steeple
neat. Yeah. Although they repeat the exact same shot later.
Yeah.
With blood on the bell. With different people.
Yeah.
Which was weird, but that was an interesting shot. Mm-hmm. I really liked when, because the lady goes into the church and there's the big shadow of the cross, and it's and then you see like the sort of arms, if you will, I'm making air quotes, the arms of the cross like start to move down on the shadow.
Yeah.
And it's like a shadowy figure.
Yeah.
But it was set up as if it was the shadow of the cross. I mean, it's in the wrong place anyway.
Yeah.
So had you really been paying attention?
Yeah.
But I mean, they cheat where shadows coming from in movies all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not that unusual. So at first you see it and you're just like, oh, there's like a big shadow of the cross on the wall. Kind of cliche. It looks good, but it's kind of cliche. And then it starts to move and you're just like, okay, that's pretty clever.
That was
pretty cool. I did not see that coming.
And the screaming. And then just like slam cut to,
That was pretty neat. I actually kind of enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. Like I can't say I've seen horror movies and stuff. Although, as you pointed out, I mean, this is as much like sort of comedy as it is horror. It's kind of a.
I mean, it's not,
a mix.
The thing is, it's not really comedy. Like, that's like
well, it's not,
like they're not trying to.
No,
make
it's
you
not
laugh.
A spoof.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the humor is humor. Like the humor is intentional. Like it's not. It's a very light. It's not a hardcore horror movie. It's very light.
And I think possibly maybe that's what they were trying to do with Captain Kronos himself. They were trying to make him so unbelievable that it was supposed to be funny, but that's sort of the one thing that didn't really...
Or maybe it was kind
of... You were just supposed to go, oh, come on, that's ridiculous.
Or maybe because it has that kind of adventure sort of swashbuckling aspect to it, maybe they were trying to sort of harken back to some of the old kind of like the pulp hero type of things, Doc Savage and that kind of stuff, where it's like those very just like perfect protagonists, you know, that like are just good at everything
small spoken.
Maybe that's what they're going for. I don't know, but because it is like basically a very sort of light adventure kind of feel, but it's kind of just crossed with this kind of horror aspect.
Yeah.
So then when like Kronos and his people go to the church to investigate. Like I say, they use that exact same bell shot.
Mm-hmm.
There was, and then the other thing was the there's that the oh I guess this was the part that I'm thinking of with the chess thing when it calls back to that, but the sex scene, if you will, with Kronos and Carla, where it's like that was the weirdest sex scene ever in movies, where it's just kind of these like in the dark and these just kind of weird angles just kind of like
like, whoop, there's one of them, there's the other one, there's one, there's the other, there's one, there's, and they're just kind of moving closer to each other, but it's like in the dark, and it's just like,
well, that scene uses, I
understand that they weren't gonna, you know, they didn't want to do
that scene uses a lot of what throughout this movie they do. A lot of scenes consist of like cut to character, zoom in on a character, zoom in, and then while you're zooming in, immediately cut to another character, zoom in, and then we're getting too close, cut back to another character, zoom in,
but like nothing actually happens,
and then it just stops, and you're
just like,
and then like,
what just happened?
Cut to wide pan, everybody's standing there, and you're like, but they were just having a conversation, like, you know, and of course the whole time the music in this is very 70s.
It's so over the top.
The
music is awful.
The music is, in a way, kind of like the funniest thing about the movie. Like, it is really weird. Like,
Okay, let's put it this way. At the very beginning, in the opening credits scene, when Kronos and Professor Gross are just, like,
galloping through
the things and stuff like that, and there's the music and the credits coming up, I was just like, this is, like, a hair's breadth away from Monty Python now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And that scene also goes on.
Because it's the entire credits. Well, it's the old school style credits, right? Where you get, like, pretty much all the credits at the beginning.
They show him galloping on his horse, Professor Gross riding their wagon.
On their wagon.
The pots and pans in the wagon are all rattling.
Yeah. And then just, and that really ridiculous.
And it goes on for, like, 8 minutes. It's hilarious.
Well, it's not 8 minutes. Yeah. I guarantee it's not 8 minutes, but it probably felt like it. Okay, so now we get to the part where it really gets good for me. And that's the bar.
Oh.
From the bar scene where it introduces, like, the thugs with Caro, their leader is this guy called Caro. And that from that
also
point...
Also unintentionally hilarious.
Oh, I'm sure it's very intentional.
Oh, you think?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, okay. Absolutely. That point on is basically where it gets good for me.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like, the rest of it, I was kind of like, all right, whatever, it's set up. This is where the movie gets good to me. So the first thing I noticed was the bartender is awesome.
He's literally wearing a bald cap.
Okay. No, God, no.
No?
No, that was fully real. That was real baldness.
Oh, really?
It's actually the dude who plays the bartender. This is really interesting. I discovered this, like, not at the time, but as I was looking at stuff about the movie. The actor's name is John Hollis, and he played Lobot in Star Wars. The helper... Lando's helper with, like, the bionic thing in his head. Yeah.
Wow.
It's totally that guy.
Oh, and he's bald there, too. He's just a bald
guy. I mean, clearly he's a bald dude.
Wow, because it really looked like it was just...
It's just the print you were watching.
Yeah.
The copy.
The copy I was watching.
But, he's definitely actually bald.
The copy I was
bald.
Watching also didn't have, like, the sound really sounded like... Like layered on top, like all the dialogue sounded.
Well,
really
you got to remember, like Kronos, all Kronos' dialogue is dubbed over because the actor's German, so he would have had like an accent. So they had like a British actor dubbed it over.
Okay,
which is very not uncommon back then at all. Right?
That's probably what it was then.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, we talked about that with the Bond film last week, right? Like that was not an uncommon thing, right?
I tried to look up other stuff. This actor, Horst Jensen, what else? Like nothing.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure.
He just kind of really.
I'm sure, like, he was in other things, but
nothing that, like, I mean, maybe he became maybe
people
was
would recognize
more
now.
German or TV
yeah,
actor,
maybe.
But like his IMDb credits are very minimal. I was.
But yeah, so the bartender guy. So it's John Hollis is the actor's name, and he played Lobot in Star Wars. And but the first thing I noticed with him before I knew that, the first thing I noticed with him is he's like wiping or scrubbing like the bar there at the very beginning of the scene. And then he, like, goes, and then he, like, starts, like, scratching his nose, like, with the wipe or whatever that he's wiping the bar
with.
I was just like, that's awesome. And then there's the whole thing where there's, like, the character.
It's his one cloth for everything.
Yeah. And then there's the whole thing with, like, the Caro character who's kind of, like, the sort of miscreant.
Vicious thug.
Yeah, the vicious thug who is the leader of this gang of thugs, I guess. They don't really go into too much detail about what he is, but. But this character was hilarious.
Yeah.
I thought he was awesome. And I looked it up, and the actor actually was in... I knew I recognized him, but I couldn't remember from where. But he had a big role in Get Carter, the original Get Carter.
Oh.
And he, in fact, was originally intended to be the lead in that. He was supposed to play Carter in Get Carter. But he had, like, a major... like alcohol problem and some health issues that really kind of curtailed his career and stuff. So he wasn't going to really be able to handle playing the lead role in that anyway. And by the time, you know, they'd already decided to get Michael Caine anyways, obviously Michael Caine was a huge star at the time. So
that was a good get.
Yeah. I mean, it worked out for the best probably, but he was great in this. From what I remember, he was good in that. So, yeah, I thought that whole thing was hilarious. That's where I say, like, it really... But I love the part where... Because basically he gets hired by the coachman of this... Oh, I guess... I forgot to mention. So like, there's this whole thing about this weird, like, rich family
yeah.
where the mother is like bedridden and old and stuff, and then there's like a son and a daughter,
and well
the, and the father is dead,
the father's
dead. the lord father
and
is
he
dead.
Was dead at like the family sort of the mother especially blames Dr. Marcus
right.
because
oh yeah he died under his care. He had the plague
yeah. It was the plague, but there was like nothing they could
yeah,
do
yeah yeah obviously yeah yeah right I forgot about that. Okay, so that's an important thing. So basically the coachman that works for this family hires Caro and his goons to kill or you know to at least attack Kronos.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I liked there was where there's this whole scene in the whole scene in the bar where the thugs are making trouble, and the coachman is just sitting there at a table watching everything and kind of just being like okay yeah, this guy. And then at the end of it he's like, he kind of calls out to him, he's like, you know, Caro, and he goes to talk to him, and his sort of Caro's kind of like sidekick there is sort of like, when you talk to him, speak soft, you know, like as in like, you know, like show respect and stuff,
yeah,
you know, because
yeah.
he's supposed to be like this badass. And I love the coachman's like, I'll do better than that. I'll speak money.
Yeah, I wrote that down too.
Great line.
Another great quote.
Great
yeah.
line. Oh, I love that line. Yeah. So they pay him off and stuff. So. Oh yeah. Okay. So then the next sort of thing I have after that was, where you see, cause they go off to, put the little,
the toad in the holes.
Yeah. The toads and the bells.
Yeah.
The bells on like the ribbons, like in the forest and stuff.
Well, cause yeah, they have a general idea. They kind of know where this vampire is coming from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they set up
a
perimeter.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. So there's that whole part where like Marcus kind of wanders off. Dr. Marcus kind of wanders off and, he gets waylaid by the vampire or the monster, and you see, like, because before they had talked about how, like, oh, how in order for the victims to be caught, you know, because they were, like, you know, they're like, religious and stuff like that, so it's, like, they would have their beliefs and stuff would have, like, be protection in that, right?
Yeah.
And so they have this whole explanation of like, oh, their will is not their own because they were like hypnotized or mesmerized. So you see Marcus, Dr. Marcus, you see this happen to him, and you like, you get the mesmerism from like his perspective of mm-hmm. like the person being mesmerized, and it has all these like crazy like where the shots freeze for
yeah.
a moment and stuff
and then,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, she was, like, running, like, a
yeah,
running,
and,
like, and then it stops
and it'll go
for
to, like,
second,
a freeze frame.
And then, like,
and
lightning
be, like,
strikes, and then it sort of, like,
yeah,
freezes mid-strike.
Yeah, there's all
yeah.
this kind of different... So that was kind of neat, that yeah. they were trying to sort of convey, like, the sort of disorientation and stuff yeah. of,
like,
the victim.
Like, while
of
he was mesmerized, he was, like, unaware of the passage of time.
Yeah, yeah, and then he kind of comes yeah. out the other end of the forest, and he's got, like, the blood... dripping from like his mouth or whatever, from the corner of his mouth and that, which the other victims had. It was really interesting because it wasn't the sort of general kind of, oh, the monster swoops in and just grabs you and like it's a physical attack and stuff. You see it from the perspective of the victim who's mesmerized and like how they perceive it and or, you know, don't perceive it basically, like just how like they don't even realize what's happened. So the difference here, of course, is that Marcus actually sort of starts to turn into a vampire.
Well, yeah, he gets all, cause he's like, he goes to shave and he looks in the mirror
yeah.
and he's like, I look so young.
He looks younger. Yeah.
And so he runs to Captain Kronos
yeah,
and
yeah.
he's like,
and
he's like, what my face? What's, you know?
Yeah. And then you see that thing where like the teeth kind of appear. That was really well done. They did it so that like,
out.
You can't really see, you know, like, I don't know how exactly they did it. And from the 70s
it was a close-in shot. It could have just been like a
but
time lapse.
It was really
like,
well done. Like it was really smooth, and because he's kind of talking, and then he just kind of does this thing, and then like the teeth are sort of there. That was really neat, and yeah, that was a really cool scene.
Well, then they try to rid him of his.
Well, he basically, you know, insists like they have to kill him, kind of thing.
He's like, yeah, I don't look like this, and
so they have to, and I like how they mention the thing about how the power, like the vampire power, will be like removed upon the moment of death, right?
Right.
So that's how they'll know that it's for reals, right? So they grab their stakes, and those are like some badass stakes.
Oh, yeah,
those
they're like carved spears.
Well, they're like spears, but they're like all carved and stuff, and those are really
very
cool.
Yeah.
I really like their stakes. So they try to stake them, that doesn't work. They try to hang them because that was one of the things they mentioned earlier, and that doesn't work. So they go to use fire. And then Cronus like inadvertently stabs him with his cross
that he has on his neck.
Well,
yeah, because he goes to use fire, and he's like Cronus is holding him, and he starts to convulse, and they're like, but the fire didn't even touch him.
Yeah,
and then
it clearly shows that he accidentally jammed in.
Yeah, and then he rips his shirt open, and then the cross is stuck in his chest, and they're like, oh, it's iron.
It's like a steel cross.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really cool where they you see like the Dr. Marcus, like his hair goes gray again and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then he like goes back to like his normal self, and he has that line where he's just like, just before he dies, he's like, myself again. And I that was a really cool idea that they sort of, they become like their natural selves again, like just on the moment of
death,
that they've died, because the vampire power has been kind of removed from them. Like, that was really neat. I liked that. That was a cool idea. So they go and they get the big cross, and
which leads to the single most ridiculous
turn the
scene
cross
in the movie.
Yeah. So they forge the cross into the steel cross, the big steel cross from the
specifically
from the church.
Professor Gross.
Yeah.
Forges a steel cross overnight with a hammer and anvil.
Into a sword.
Into like the most well-crafted, fit for a king.
Okay. Well, it wasn't that great, but
that's exactly what they say that he says in the movie.
No, I know. I'm saying my opinion is that it wasn't that great. But
it was just like, oh, so he's a professor and a blacksmith.
Okay. Well, that's not that strange. I mean,
miracle blacksmith at that.
But my issue with it is more just the practical issue of if they turn it into a sword, it's not really a cross anymore. How do you know that it's going to have the same effect?
Yeah, I think they assumed
it's like
was
when you make it into a cross, that imbues it. Imbues it with some kind of holy power.
I think it was the material, not the.
But then it could have been made from anything, and then normal sword would do it. Because
no, that's what I mean. It needed to be made of because it was an iron cross. It needed to be a
steel.
They specifically
say steel.
Oh. Weird. I swear they said iron.
No, they.
That's why they
never say the word iron. I thought they were going to as well because of the whole kind of mythological, like using iron against fairies and things.
Yeah,
mystical things. They never say iron. Okay. They specifically say steel. And
because that
like,
because it that's which is odd because the cross would not have been made of steel.
Well, that's the thing is that's
so that's why I wanted
they needed
like, I
a cross. They needed something that was larger.
Yeah,
that was a cross. That was made of steel.
Yeah,
so that was like the only choice was that cross
was
that
device.
They take
yeah.
that one, right? Yeah. But I was like, but then when you turn into a sword, it's like, well, it's not really, it's not cross anymore. So what's the point? Like, you may as well just use a normal sword. I didn't get that. That was silly. But I guess the idea is just like, because it was made into a cross
originally,
that somehow it just imbues it with holy power to begin with.
Sure.
I didn't get that. That was lame. But whatever.
We missed the part about the bat attack.
The bat attack.
I was hoping
you weren't going to mention that.
The bat attack. it was just one more thing that happened to that family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's this family in town, and they've got like the girl. It's her friend that dies. Killed originally.
Yeah.
Then she gets killed later. The son is like hobbling. He's got like a Tiny Tim style.
Yeah.
Like, and then like the mother goes out, and she gets like killed by like this giant vampire bat. And it's just like, holy crap, this poor family. They're just like the victims for no reason.
They couldn't afford that many people.
I guess,
to be in the movie.
Yeah, and so they just, the vampire just like totally sticks into this poor family. I was like, the dad is all that's left at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah. So there's this really hilarious running joke where Carla's always leaning against Cronus. Like they're like sitting or whatever, or lying down on the ground or something. Mm-hmm. And she's always, like, leaning against him. And when he sort of hops away to do something, she falls over. Yeah. And it happens, like, several times. It's I lost it.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. It was, I didn't notice
because
it
he,
until,
because
like,
he moves, like, so quickly.
Quick. I didn't actually notice that it was happening until at this point in the movie, because they're sitting on the grass, and she's talking, and then he just, like, suddenly hops up, and she just almost face plants into the water.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And I brought up, and I was like, oh my god, that was hilarious. And Laura's like, yeah, it happens every time, and I totally missed it.
It happens over and over. It's freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
So they basically use Carla to get... They figure out that, you know, this the rich, the Lord's family is involved in this. And they Carla goes and kind of gets into the house, into the family's house to sort of distract.
She's bait.
She's bait. Yeah, well...
Well, because they think it's the... They are fairly sure it's the sister of the brother and sister of the... She's weird.
She's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all weird, but...
Yeah, okay, the brother's no less weird,
So she is there while Kronos, you know, can sneak into the house, while they use her as bait. And, so the Durwards, that's this family. Durwards. That's the family. So Lady Durward, who's like been, you know, the old lady in the mother who was bedridden the whole time, shows up. She's all, you know, youthful and everything, and obviously is revealed as the vampire.
Yeah.
But what was crazy was they show like they on her bed the mask that she wore.
Time they showed her in bed, she wore the mask.
The old decrepit version of her is just a mask.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of things in this movie that they showed the audience that the people in the movie didn't see, so that you knew it was her, because, like, you knew it wasn't the sister, because early on, the doctor goes to visit the house, the sister comes down the stairs, and you see her coming downstairs in the mirror next to the doctor, I think that's supposed to be so, like, you know she's not the vampire.
Well, no, because when Dr. Marcus is turned into a vampire, how he realizes it is because he's looking in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not like a mirror vampire type of movie.
Well, except that the first time when blonde wig girl gets turned into a vampire, she's looking at herself in a mirror, and there's a hood behind her, and there's nothing in the hood. It's just a hood.
Yeah, but I think that was just meant to be... that the cloak is like it's really dark.
See, that's what that confused me at the Dr. Marcus part, and I was like, oh, it's maybe because Dr. Marcus isn't fully.
I think it was just meant
yet?
To be like the cloak was like it's like
and
cloak
also,
is very dark.
Twice before they show the mother in bed and the son is talking to her, and the mouth on the mask that she's wearing doesn't move.
Right. But I don't think that's because we were meant to know that it was a mask. I think it was just because it was a crappy mask.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Right. Like, I wasn't sure how much of that was like
because that was clearly intended. Because it was obviously intended that's what she looks like, that she's like old and decrepit. But it just was a really bad mask.
Because early on, she's in like a carriage, and Dr. Marcus even like sees her, and he's like, "Oh gosh, she's gotten so old."
I assumed
it was something for us and not.
No, it was just this. It was just a really ridiculous mask. So when Lady Durward appears and reveals herself as a vampire,
she's super young. Yeah.
Right. So. What's interesting about that is that actress is Wanda Ventham, who is Sherlock's mom.
Yes.
But in more ways than one, because that literally is Benedict Cumberbatch's mom, and she played Sherlock's mom on Sherlock. But because Sherlock's parents are Benedict Cumberbatch's real parents, like the dad is his real dad too. Like they're a couple. Anyways, so Lady Durward uses her powers
this is
or whatever.
UK Sherlock we're talking about here.
Yeah, like the show Sherlock. That's why I say Sherlock. Yeah. That's the name of the show. Lady Durward uses her powers to basically like resurrect her husband, temporarily at least, because I think she says because they were going to use Carla. Yeah. As like the victim to like bring him back, but
he's kind of gross.
There's all like he's not fully alive again. But there's all this stuff where throughout the whole rest of the movie, there's all this stuff about he's like the greatest swordsman.
Right.
Like
there's
you know,
a statue.
Yeah, there's a statue of him with a sword and stuff, and he's supposed to like have this reputation as like, you know, he was at war and he was like the greatest swordsman and stuff. Like that. So they have a big sword fight with him and Kronos.
Well, there's the thing is they sort of there's a lead up to this where Kronos goes to the bar where
I forgot that whole part because there's
the guy was hired.
I
to
set
kill
it up
him.
With Caro.
Caro's
yeah.
hired to kill.
Duh,
him.
I totally
and then
forgot.
Kronos goes to the bar and Caro's all like, "I'm gonna kill you."
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't say that. But that's a whole scene. And then like. Kronos just in like two sword flashes.
Yeah, he just
like,
swipes the sword back and forth,
and it kills him and his compatriots.
Yeah.
He's like effortlessly like.
Oh yeah. Well, that's what I was sort of talking about, where it's just like it's so ridiculous because Kronos is just like virtually superhuman. He's like the best at everything. Right. Okay. So
we know he's good with the sword.
I did forget to mention that.
Yeah.
So he has this. So that's the whole thing of you have the matchup there.
Yeah. And then comes. I mean, there's a sword fight here that is actually. Quite well choreographed.
It's pretty good.
Considering, like, a lot of other stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And then he stabs him with the sword.
Yeah.
And it goes, like, right through him.
Well, because
and they continue on.
Well, because he
the
does,
vampire guy has
he drop he drops or whatever the other sword.
He drops
the sword made from the cross. So he uses just like a regular sword and stabs him through.
Yeah.
And of course that doesn't do anything.
But they still continue fighting and the one guy has got the sword through him.
But that also reminded me because I also forgot to mention we do get to see one other kind of thing of Kronos' fighting prowess because after they kill Dr. Marcus, once he's been turned into a vampire, that's seen by one of the villagers. And so the villagers think that Kronos murdered Dr. Marcus. And so a bunch of the villagers come after him.
They get swords and pitchforks and they go get him.
Yeah,
the
and
cemetery.
He has to basically take them all down without actually really hurting them. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of shows his expertise, fighting expertise in that scene as well.
Yeah. That scene, not as well choreographed
No, but it's pretty good considering it's like one guy fighting, you know, a whole bunch.
A lot of that, like,
not to...
sweeping sword, knocking down like a bunch of guys at once, kind of like very
flourishy
moves.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't
moves.
Anything that impressive. Impressive, but it was still kind of complicated because there were so many people. But yeah, so they have the sword fight, and also the way that he prevents Lady Durward from being able to do anything is he uses the mirrored part of the steel sword to reflect her mesmerism
on herself,
which I think is hilarious because it's like. Yeah. Really? So the vampire is vulnerable to their mesmerism?
I wrote that down. I was like,
come on.
Well, it's actually funny,
but you know what?
Lady Durwood mesmerizes the girl.
Yeah.
And then she mesmerizes both her kids.
Right.
And then she gets mesmerized. There was a sword fight. Everyone else
as
in the room
just
is
standing there
mesmerized.
It's awesome.
The professor is hiding up in the rafters.
Yeah, yeah. I know,
like
it's hilarious. It's just like, how do you get all these characters to just stand aside and not interfere with the scene?
But they also sword fight around them a bit. And
awesome.
I almost wish it was like a little more, the fact that they were mezzed and in the way had actually played into it a little more.
Yeah.
But
that would have been nice, but I think it's hilarious that was their solution for like, how do you get these characters to just not be involved in the scene?
Yeah.
They're all mesmerized. I will say that as ridiculous as it may seem, the idea that like the vampire would be mesmerized by their own mesmerism, by being reflected on them, while that seems ridiculous from the perspective of, you know, most like sort of horror movies and stuff you'd see where, you know, normally the vampires would be immune, you know, say like something like True Blood or something where, you know, obviously vampires can't glamour each other and things like that. But it actually kind of really works on like a mythological level.
Sure.
Because it's like the whole like Medusa thing where the mirrored shield reflects Medusa's gaze on herself and turns herself to stone, things like that. It is very kind of mythological to turn the monster's ability on themselves and things like that. Well, so on that level, it works. On a level of like modern horror movies, you'd think like, oh, that's stupid. Like, why would anything, you know, evolve in such a way that they get their abilities affect themselves?
Well, it's magical, right?
You know?
So the rules don't necessarily.
Yeah.
But I guess it's one of those like
in a mythological kind of way it works.
It all depends. Like, sort of like it seems like often like vampire mesmerism is very. It's a directed intent. Like, I'm mesmerizing you for a purpose.
Yeah.
And so, like, you may not be able to turn that around on them because
as they're opposed to mesmerizing you to make you think that you're a porpoise,
which is
totally different thing.
Now that would be amusing.
So eventually, So
big sword fight.
Yeah,
scene.
Kronos gets the cross, the steel sword made from the cross, takes out the lord.
Takes out the lady. And they go super gross.
Well, okay, but see, the thing that got me here, which I just was just like, oh my, I have to shake my head again, was when he takes out the lady, and her, like, face becomes the face of the mask that she was wearing to make herself look old.
Oh, the mask upstairs?
And I'm like, well, wait, they've already established that was just a mask that she was wearing to cover the fact that she looked young.
Well, she modeled it after herself.
What?
But then it also shatters. The mask upstairs shatters.
Yeah, but it was like,
what was that? Was it a magical mask?
Yeah, that was stupid.
Yeah, and then really they're both lying there on the floor.
I liked
and
when
they're super gross.
Yeah, like I liked when they were sort of like skeletons and kind of, you know, with like the blood and stuff.
Yeah.
That part was that was cool. Like the end thing where they're kind of lying together almost.
Yeah.
That was cool. I just didn't like the fact that when she turns old after being from being killed, that it looks exactly the same as the mask that she was wearing.
Mask,
that was the fake mask to make people think that she was old when she was really.
I guess maybe, like I said, she maybe fashioned the mask after what, because she was already old.
But why would you do that? Like, that's retarded.
Well, so it doesn't bring other people's suspicion. Because if you don't change.
That was horrible.
Know. And then, of course, at that point, the mesmerism breaks on everybody when she dies.
Yeah.
So her kids come to. Yeah. They see their parents, like, disgusting, bloody skeleton old people on the floor.
That's going to take some explanation.
Oh, they're just, like, screaming.
That's going to take some explanation.
And the movie then just kind of
ends. Well, because of the whole, like, it was supposed to be the beginning of a new franchise. So they're setting it up as a series. So the ending is basically just Kronos basically just being like, well, we're off to our next, you know,
adventure,
thing. And, and they just kind of leave.
And they leave what's-her-name behind.
They leave Carla, Like, he's just
for
like...
For no reason.
Well, except for, obviously...
I mean, like, it's not like she had anywhere to go.
Well, yeah. It would have made more sense. Okay, like, in a normal movie, it would have made way more sense for her to
go with them.
But I think because it was planned to be a series,
he had
you have to have a different. It's like Bond, right?
Yeah, like Bond.
So, so I think that the idea was that the only continuing characters would be Kronos and Professor Grost, just traveling around killing vampires.
Yeah.
So they just kind of had to have them leave without her, even though really there's no reason why they would do so. And he just kind of says like, well, I'll think of you, and she kind of says, like, I'll think of you,
and that's it.
And you're just like, well, why does she just go with you? It's not like she has anything to do in this village.
She clearly has, like,
there's
no
home, point.
No nothing.
And if you were doing it as, like, a close-ended story, you would just have her go with them. But because as a series, they already knew, like, the only regular characters.
I like that, though. The set of Captain Kronos. He's like the James Bond of the vampire hunting universe.
I would be fine with that.
He's James
Bond. I would watch.
That makes Professor Gross Q.
He's kind of Q.
He's
kind
of Q/M.
Yeah. Because you know all the like sciencey stuff that Kronos doesn't do.
Yeah.
Kronos does all the fighting.
Does all the fighting, all that stuff. Yeah,
and Gross does all the sciencey stuff.
Just like James Bond, he's like unbelievably perfect.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, although I didn't love this movie by any means, I would watch Captain Kronos 2.
Oh, yeah,
if it existed.
For sure.
Just to see what they would do next.
Like, where are they going next?
If the second one was terrible, then I might stop there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I would give the second one a try.
Oh, for sure.
Second one doesn't exist, never happened. But if it had, like, I would have given it a try.
There has to be scripts.
You would think so.
There's got to be a script.
You would think
somewhere.
So. I mean, since it was very clearly planned to be a series.
So this wasn't, I mean, you didn't love this movie. I didn't. Love this movie.
I mean,
I enjoyed it.
Especially the specific things that I pointed out that I liked.
In some ways, I kind of wish the movie had, like, I wish the movie was a little more weird in some ways. Like,
it was
too tame.
Well, like you say, to be like a cult classic, you almost kind of expect it needs to be a little more weird,
also,
or a little more quirky.
I wish, and this was maybe just a reflection of budget / probably more acting ability than anything of some of the actors, is despite it being about a vampire hunter and all the kind of interesting and odd things that go on, the movie is a little dry. Like, I don't know if that's just maybe
that's pretty funny, but...
It may just be Captain Kronos himself makes the movie like he's dry, and so like your supporting cast has to bring it up, and while some of them did, some of them didn't.
Yeah, like, but that's very typical of like the Hammer stuff. Like,
yeah,
there's always like one or two that kind of stand out as like
oh
they're great, and then everyone else is just kind of getting the job done, you know, bare minimum job done. Yeah. Like you say, I mean, there's definitely probably some budgetary issues because. You know, like Hammer being kind of on the way out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of why.
Was this like their end, or did they?
No, but it was kind of a slow decline throughout the 70s. Like, I think even, I think they made stuff into like, you know, they may have made it into sort of the second half of the 70s, just barely kind of thing. But they were definitely limping along. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're still around, but
no, they brought it back. They brought the label back.
Oh, they brought the label.
It was defunct for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, because they just
but so, they don't produce anything more. They just distribute their old stuff. Well, very much.
The new version of Hammer does produce new things. Like what was the one with Daniel Radcliffe, like Lady in Black or whatever.
Oh, was that
like
those, was that a.
That was kind of like the beginning of like the new Hammer.
That was Hammer,
but I don't know how much like the current version of Hammer, how much connection it has to the original version. Like, it may just be that like somebody bought the rights to use the name or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't really know too much about that.
Yeah.
I like the old Hammer stuff. I like the 60s stuff, the Christopher Lee Dracula stuff.
Yeah,
that stuff's classic.
Actually, I think that's the only other Hammer movie I've seen is the first one? The first one,
That's really good. Horror Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
58, that's really good. A couple of the 60s ones are good.
All right.
That's pretty much
Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter. Like I said, if you're interested, you can watch it on YouTube. Quality seems okay there. You know, it's VHS quality. But you know, this movie does not require 1080p, you know, no. Blu-ray.
I have it on DVD, so
yeah.
It looked pretty good. The DVD looked pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Well, I like the version I watched was quite it was clean and crisp and that. But that's why I was wondering about the sound, like why it sometimes sounded dubbed, but so that was his voice.
Yeah,
I didn't.
The sound
that.
On the DVD is quite good.
It's interesting because I looked up a few things about this movie and I never. I never came.
I didn't notice it until I was looking at. I mean, I kind of assumed that it was probably the case because I knew that it was like he was like a German actor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought like, well, maybe he's just like a really good actor and he can do the accent. Like it happens.
Sometimes people can.
Because it's not like the accent was that subtle. Like it was pretty over the top anyway. So I thought, oh, maybe he's just
doing that accent.
You know, who knows? Like, maybe he's just a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Then I saw on the list of the cast list, there was one where it said, like, Kronos voice or voice of Kronos or something. And I was like, okay, that makes
sense. I'd watch that movie, too. The voice of Kronos.
Well, maybe that's, like, part three or something.
Part three, yeah.
I don't know.
He just narrates the whole thing. All right, so that's it for this week. A little bit of a shorter one. So people want to get a hold of us.
By the way, I just wanted to mention, because this had come up a few episodes ago when we did Angel Heart.
Oh, right.
And we were talking about how, you know, it might be a little bit hard for people to watch that because it's, like, not...
readily available.
Not too readily available, and you had looked like for, you know, streaming sources, stuff like that. It is currently on Netflix.
Oh.
I don't know if that's since we did the episode or if we just missed it at the time.
Yeah.
But it is now for sure because I've seen it listed on there.
Okay, well that's good.
That's a really good movie, and for people who didn't have a chance to see it, it is on Netflix, so it'll be a lot easier to see.
I can just check right now. Yep. Let's see. It's definitely on Netflix US. I'm just seeing if it's on Netflix.
What, Angel Art?
Canada here, like still. And yep. It's on.
We're talking like yesterday.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Okay, great.
So
okay,
I know
great.
It's on there. Okay. So it must be. It must have been added since we did.
Oh well, it was added because we did.
Oh, great.
Enough people.
Excellent.
Yeah. They were like.
Anyway,
they were like oversight. We can't believe we don't have this classic movie.
So, anyways, I just wanted to do a follow up on that because at the time that wasn't the case, and so now people can check it out, and that was a really good movie. So, yeah. All right. So
People can get a hold of us. People can listen to other episodes.
Yeah, so the episodes are all on SoundCloud, of course, and iTunes. You can search for What We've Watched Podcast on iTunes to get all the episodes there. Yeah, we need stars and comments and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, please.
All that good stuff. On SoundCloud, the episodes are all downloadable. If that's preferred, to just, you know, be able to listen to them later and things like that. What else we got? We got Twitter for the podcast. That's at What We've Watched.
Yep.
And so we'll have all our announcements of episode releases and things like that on there. And, you know, you can send comments on there and ideas. Mm-hmm. Ideas are good, like, for what you'd like to see for episodes, for top fives, things like that. We could always use ideas for that. Everyone really seems to like the top five, judging by the top five of the past 5 years that we did for episode five. People seem to like that. So definitely top five ideas are cool. So we can do those.
Email us at What We've Watched Podcast.
www.podcast@shaw.ca.
Right.
Yeah.
If that's your preferred method of communication, but yeah, tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Your feedback means we can make a better show.
Yep. Basically.
Or we can ignore you and continue stumbling along the way we are.
No, definitely. I would love to hear feedback. And I would love to hear ideas, whether it be like a requests for specific movies, or requests for top fives. That'd be great. More ideas for top fives, because we definitely want to do more of those. People seem to like those, and we like doing it. So, funny top five requests would be pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. So we'll see you next week. Bye.
Laters.